Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Welcome, dear friends. Our subject today is death. And as you probably already know, it is one of the most evaded, ignored, and denied subjects, especially in our progress-oriented society and really youth-loving society, youth-worshipping society. It often falls under the category of another disease to be conquered, even though it's inevitable. We also know that it is as much a part of human existence and growth as is life. And even though it is an integral part of our life, which is, we know it gives us meaning, it remains for many of us something that we prefer not to think about or plan for. In fact, did you know that 55% of adults aged 55 to 64 don't even have a will? And I always find this fascinating because it's like, okay, I mean, death can happen. When you're young and when you're older, definitely. But the fact that people don't even want to talk about it or think about it or think about their own death. And another interesting thing is that the problem of death does not reach us in the core of our being unless it is my imminent death or someone close to me, right? We see death all around us every day. I mean, we turn on the TV, death is there. I mean, we hear people are dying all the time. But it doesn't really hit us until it is our own impending death or somebody that we love. Right. So Perletta, I just want to ask you a question. When did you first realize that you were going to die one day?
I recall my first memory of death that made me think about it. I was 6 years old. And mm-hmm. there was a cousin who was very close to my family that died suddenly. He was in his 30s, like 36 years old. And I remember thinking, if that can happen to him, that can happen to me. It was devastating because mm-hmm. I was sick, right? I didn't have a context for death. And then interestingly that you asked me that because my mother, throughout my childhood, talked about death. And she was afraid that she was going to die before I became an adult. My brothers and I reached adulthood because her mother died when she was 9. And so I had this fear of death instilled in me very early. Mm. Like, I hope my mother doesn't die. I hope she doesn't die. You know, before I even almost knew what it meant. And wow. And I carried through with me, for quite a long time until I've been able to work through that, for sure.
So what, if you can just recall, which is, difficult. I mean, it was so long ago, but, what did it mean to you that the person has died? I mean, what did that, what in your, from your 6-year-old mind, what did you think happened?
Well,
where did the person go?
I associated the death with a physical experience in my own body. I remember going numb. And he and I were very close. He would play with me, and, I didn't know that we were cousins. I wasn't really familiar with that term, but I felt like we were friends when I was a kid, and we used to make Nestle's Quick chocolate milk together. And, we had this little game that we play, and so at the end of our playing, he would always make me chocolate milk, and I remember feeling sick every time I saw chocolate milk for years afterwards. So I associated death with like a sick, unhealthy feeling. along the top of notes, but that's like my child mind. But to the point that you asked about what was conjured up for me, it was all negative feelings, you know, and thoughts of sadness. And I had some awareness because my family was religious of, you know, the spirit. And I was afraid of the spirit because I understood to some degree that there was this person that wasn't the body. And I didn't know where they went. But for years, I was afraid even to go to his funeral because I kept thinking his spirit was going to touch me or scare me or do something to me. So it was a lot of negativity, actually.
So, you know, that was going to be my next question to you was, you know, what message did you get from others about where your cousin is now? You know, like, is he up there looking down on you or, you know, is he just all around you or, you know, because you said you felt kind of scared, you know, like, oh, where is he, you know? So what the messages that you got from others was that, oh, yeah, you just live on. There's some immortality, you know, sense of what's gone on with the person, right? Is that what you're saying? I mean, yeah.
He did not die.
His body died.
But his spirit was God or in heaven.
And then did you go to the funeral? And, I mean, you did all of that. Did you actually see, like, you know, did they have an open casket or, like, how
went
was
to
it
the funeral? Cried like a baby, but because I wasn't, he had children who were my cousins. He was like actually a second cousin to me. I didn't. His family, you know, mourned all of his family, but certainly his nuclear family mourned. It was a horrible, you know, unexpected death for someone who's 36. So there was a lot of crying and mourning. And I hate to say it like this because crying and mourning is just a part of the process of letting someone go. But I remember feeling horrible as a kid. Like, it was so profoundly sad to me. It took me many years to kind of work through the loss of him and not in transitioning the feeling that I have now around death, that it's a relief and it's, you know, a part of the life cycle. Because there was so much, sad feelings associated with the loss of him that I associated death with sadness and like not recovering.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting that when we look back on when we first sort of established our bias in how we look at death, because, you know, when I really realized that I was going to die was when I was around the same age as you, around six. But it wasn't because I saw somebody else die. It was because I thought I was going to die, because at that time in India, there was a war going on between India and Pakistan. And I knew that when bombs fall, that a person can die. I don't know, like, how I made that connection, but I happened to get caught one day. I heard the bomb sirens go off, so I went and jumped into this trench that we had, and you know, that the neighbors and my parents, like my mom, that we had dug this trench to jump into for safety, and I got caught one day by myself in that trench. And I was only about, you know, 5.5, 6 years old. And that was a pivotal time in my life. It just instilled that fear like nothing else. So I just want you to know that this is huge, because if we can see where our bias toward death started, we can see that it's probably fear-based every time we make an association with death. Because this is when you had your first experience and the message you got from others is where the idea of you became sophisticated enough to realize your mortality. And this is, like I said, this is where things can get systematically wrong, because we miscalculate, we misjudge, we distort reality, or we just see what we want to see. You know, we might have gone into denial. You know, it just depends on the situation. But since none of us know what awaits us in the afterlife, right, we are going to use bias to help us cope with uncertainty and the fear of death. So, you know, what's so interesting, Perletta, is that if we all look at, you know, how we look at death, how we deal with death, you know, usually we're resonating with a particular story to see ourselves as immortal. Like, actually, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about this subject because one of my close friends passed away this weekend. So, and I was just talking to another friend and, you know, she just was going on and on about, you know, my friend's immortality. And it was just like when I broke it down, it was just one story after another story. So one of the stories is, you know, our soul continues to live on. We focus on that. Or we think of some sort of a resurrection. Or we think of heaven. Or we think that, you know, we've left a legacy. No matter which of these stories, you know, that you resonate with, we're not here to change that or to introduce you to a new belief system. That's not what we're here for. You know, if that's what works for you, you know, continue to do that. But we're also not going to shield you from the reality of death because it's inevitable. The main objective of this show is to help you grow not only in your life, but also through this experience of death, whether it's your death or my death or the death of a loved one. So Mr. Lattner says that health is not equivalent to happiness or success. It is foremost a matter of being wholly one with whatever circumstances we find ourselves in. Even our death is a healthy event if we fully embrace the fact of our dying. The issue is awareness of living in the present. Whatever our present existence consists of, if we are at one with it, we are healthy. So the reason that I'm bringing up the idea of, you know, our stories versus we're not able to be at one with death, thereby we're not at one with our life because death is something which is inevitable. And the way we look at death, so maybe we're not so healthy, you know, in this arena of our life. And maybe we just need to reevaluate, reassess this. So I just want to give an example from my own life. You know, my divorce, it truly, you know, I think divorce, Perletta, and you've gone through a divorce as well. It feels like a death in a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It is a death of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A way of connecting and being with someone. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, even when I say these words, I'm getting emotional. I am. Even though, you know, the divorce was a very healthy thing, but it is. It is, you know, it will stay with you forever. You can't just get over it. You know, in the way that, you know, it'll just maybe sometimes, you know, even though it may have been something you wanted, but there's something around it that is so, like, it, you know, it hits you in the core of your being. But, you know, on the other hand, when I just am with it and I am like, okay, this is the way it's supposed to be. And there's some good things about it. There's some, you know, very challenging things around it. And I'm just one with it. I can see all the gifts in the divorce. I mean, it's just been a very, like, trying experience, very challenging. But there have also been so many gifts that have come out of it. And I think I've talked about it in other shows too, and I'll continue to talk about it because it was a huge event in my life. The other event that happened to me is one of my close friends, she died in a plane crash as well as her two children. And I think that was my first real tragedy as it relates to death. And I was devastated. I could not get out of bed for like, you know, like 2 weeks. It was really bad. I was around 25 when that happened. And it was completely, like, it just crushed me. And so, I, you know, as time has gone on, I think that it should get easier, right? But it doesn't. Each time it happens, it brings up a lot of emotions. So for you, Perletta, if today, if you were to find out that, you know, someone close, you.
Rog, there's something just happened and you went out. I couldn't hear what you said. If today I were to find out what?
That if someone close to you was transitioning, uh-huh. Okay, what, like, how do you think that you would deal with it? I know it depends a lot on who the person is, how close they are to you and all that, but, like, just a broad sort of description of how you might handle it.
Oh, my God. I have. Well, you know, I think on some level it depends on how much attachment that I have to the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm at the place in my life now where I give myself space to mourn and feel sad. I think that there is a loss. There's a loss of the relationship. You know, I was never here or talk to or be able to enjoy the company of the person. And there's nothing inherently wrong, you know, with mourning, I think. The loss of connection with another human being. Some of the other feelings I had associated with it, though, I think were unhealthy, and I mentioned those. You know, my feeling numb and kind of going, associating negativity to death. I don't have that anymore. So I see death as a transition. I'm not sure what it transitions to. I'm not sure what, you know, what's on the quote-unquote other side, if there is anything. However, I see it now as more of the life cycle. It's just we're all going to walk that path, you know, every human being. And so it's because it now is inevitable, I tend to focus on being hopeful, prayerful that the person, you know, was who they longed to be while they were here, that they, you know, I wish and pray for them to be peaceful in the transition. And I had a loved one that died. She wasn't a particularly close loved one, but a loved one. And I remember being there during, she was in hospice during her last days. And I just held her hand and she cried. And I actually cried with her because she, you know, she was going through that process of letting go of this life and not knowing what was there. And it was my perspective as a, you know, 40-plus-year-old, it was different. It was like how beautiful that, you know, to witness her on the journey. So it is just a journey now, and I try to hold that perspective regardless of who I'm with, recognizing that a part of that for me will include the loss of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a real healthy way of looking at it, you know, just honoring their life, but also honoring their death. Also honoring that last stage of their life equally. You know, you've heard of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, right? She is like the guru of death and dying. Well, in her book, Death, The Final Stage of Growth, she says, there is no need to be afraid of death. It is not the end of the physical body that should worry us. Rather, our concern must be to live while we're alive, to release our inner selves from the spiritual death that comes with living behind a facade designed to conform to external definitions of who and what we are. Death is the key to the door of life. It is through accepting the finiteness of our individual existences that we are enabled to find the strength and courage to reject those extrinsic roles and expectations and to devote each day of our lives. I mean, to me, that is it. That is it in a nutshell. Because I mean, I believe that it is the denial of death that is partially responsible for people living empty, purposeless lives. When we live as if we are going to live forever, it becomes too easy to postpone the things that you must do. We're either living our life in preparation for tomorrow, or we're too busy remembering our past, and meanwhile, we're losing the present moment. So in contrast, when we fully understand that each day could be our last, we are more likely to live authentically and to grow. And, you know, with that, like, I think we've had this conversation before, Perletta, where, you know, I've told you, look, I think about my death every day. Like, when I wake up, I think, oh, thank goodness, first of all, that I woke up, that I got another day, because I do not take it for granted. And I think about my death, and most people think that that's so morbid. They think that's crazy. Mm-hmm. They're like,
well, I relate
you know,
to that.
Do
I
you?
Relate to that, Roger. Yeah, let me also say, you mentioned that most people don't prepare. I find comfort in having prepared for my death, you know, from a financial sense with my daughters. I've communicated. Unlike with my mother, I didn't communicate, you know, fear around it. I communicated, or at least I hoped I communicated. I tried to communicate. This is the reality. Here's what I've done to prepare for you. And I've told them. I'm like, look, I understand that there's a mourning process, but what the best thing that we can do is to live our lives and have the type of relationship while I'm here that's fulfilling for both of us. And so, like, they know where to go to get my little documents when I go. They're like, thanks, Mom. They don't want to talk about it necessarily. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the last conversation I had with my eldest, she said, I'm going to be devastated. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, that doesn't make me feel good that you're that you feel like you're going to be devastated. And I'd like to talk with you about how I can maybe help you to process some of it beforehand, because it's a natural part of life. It's okay, right? And so, you know, we all hold whatever it is that we hold around it, and it's the finality of it, you know, that makes it so compelling, I think. And it doesn't have to be. We don't have to be gripped with our fear that you talked about. And that's what, that's what I heard her say. I'm going to be gripped with fear, you know, and angst. And it's like, okay. That's a choice, and there are other ways to be that are self-helping too with our feelings around it.
Yes, absolutely. You know, like I just want to break down the steps of what, you know, Perletta and I have been doing here on this show, you know, because I think you can do this for yourself. If you're out there, you know, you're listening, you're wondering. The first thing is, you know, to understand how your biases about death, where they originated and how they originated. That's really important to understand, because that'll give you a clue into how you might have some distorted perceptions. The other thing is, you know, ask yourself if you're using an immortality story to hide behind your fear of death. So it's okay to have your belief system. It's okay to have the story that you resonate with, but it's not okay to hide behind it because of your fear of death. That's where the problems start, okay? And then ask yourself, you know, are you able to use the experience of death to your advantage, to live your life powerfully now in the present moment? Or is this something that is taking away from, you know, from that whole process? The, you know, it's, I can't remember the philosopher that said, you know, the idea of death or our processing of death, you know, it feels natural, right? That fear is natural. And, but he said, but it's not rational. So it may be natural, but it's not rational, and that's the point I want to make here. I want to read to you the most poignant verse that really hit home for me, and it's by three people, so you know there's power behind it, okay? It's by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and by Lori and Joseph Braga, and they're all like authorities in this death and dying field. So here it goes. In order to be at peace, it is necessary to feel a sense of history, that you are both a part of what has come before and part of what is yet to come. Being this surrounded, you are not alone, and the sense of urgency that pervades the present is put in perspective. Do not frivolously use the time that is yours to spend. Cherish it, that each day may bring new growth, insight, and awareness. Use this growth not selfishly, but rather in the service of what may be in the future tide of time. Again, use this growth not selfishly, but rather in service of what may be in the future tide of time. Never allow a day to pass that did not add to what was understood before. Let each day be a stone in the path of growth. Do not rest until what was intended has been done. Finally, do not allow the illusory urgencies of the immediate to distract you from your vision of the eternal. Do not allow the illusory urgencies of the immediate to distract you from your vision of the eternal. Isn't that powerful? It pretty much encompasses it all. Go ahead, Perletta. You were getting ready to say something.
Well, it also reminds me of a memory that I had about just aging. You know, I am my mother's age. I'm 46. I'll be 47 in April. I am my mother's age when I thought she was old, right? And it being, I'm going to say middle-aged, but so going toward the elder years, it's such a reminder that I have more years behind me than I probably have ahead of me. And, it, you know, it's caused me to reflect on what you've just spoken about, which is using the remaining time. Because when you think you have less time than you had before, you know, at least for me, it's made me reflect on how I want to be really mindful of how I spend my days now. You know, where before I didn't put as much effort and energy into, you know, being a good steward of my time because I thought I had this infinite amount of time, which is certainly not true. So that was a very powerful statement, Raj.
Yeah. You know, have you ever seen that there's a description about how many days we have left? You know, it's gone around quite a bit on Facebook where, you know, the guy puts some marbles in one jar for each year of or each month of life or whatever. And then, you know, for each month that goes by, you take out the marble and you look at how many marbles are left in your life. And it's such a visual. It's so impactful. And so I think that's when you were talking, that's what it reminded me of, you know, those marbles. And when you actually look at it, it's like, wow. And, you know, and we think we have so many marbles left. In actuality, we may not even have those many marbles left. You know, we may be on the last marble as we speak. But that does not have to hold you back, right? That does not have to hold you back from living your life today. So I just want to congratulate all of you for sticking with us through this topic, because this is not something you want to talk about early in the morning, and I hope that you find it valuable. Thank you so much for spending your precious time with us. Join us next week for some real healing as Perletta guides us in how to determine if we need healing and how to actually do it. Feel free to email us at pearlrajradio@gmail.com and make sure to like us on Living Life Powerfully on Facebook so that you can stay updated. And all I can say is, stay empowered, stay true to yourself, and as always, keep being amazing.
Have a fantastic and an amazing week.